They may not work, tinctures of leaves and roots people have always turned to for relief from aches and pains. On the other hand, traditional medicines have been the source of countless medical discoveries. Across Australia for tens of thousands of years, people have developed a subtle knowledge of plants and animals they believe help the sick, ease childbirth, deal with the ailments of old age, amongst many other things. At Melbourne University until the middle of next year, there's an exhibition called Cultural Medicine, The Art of Indigenous Healing, collating stories of bush medicine and holistic health practices from around this country, many still practiced today. Dr. Jacqueline Healy is the Director of Museums in the Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences at the University, and she joins me now. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Now, Jackie, when we bumped into each other the other day at the University, you grabbed my attention with a story of D-Day and the fear that seasickness would leave the troops too ill to fight.
Well, it was all going to happen, but was delayed. So the 4th of June 1944 was a delayed date. They delayed the D-Day invasion of Normandy because they were deeply concerned, the military strategists, that the soldiers would not be able to fight when they got to the beaches because they would all be seasick after crossing the channel because it's a rough passage of water. And so they put their heads together to find a solution. And I think it's really interesting the stories we choose to tell and the stories we choose not to tell or ignore is that that solution was actually found in Australia. And not just anywhere in Australia, it was found in the First Nations knowledge base of Australia.
Jackie, there was no seasick pill at this time.
No, there appears not to be one that they thought was adequate for the severity of seasickness they thought would happen.
How on earth did they become aware of a possible remedy in remote Australia?
Because of research that had been done earlier by von Mueller, who headed the Botanical Gardens in Melbourne when they first began, and he had researched First Nations plants throughout Australia and found this particular plant, the corkwood, in Queensland, in northern Australia, and its origins were, he found it through Indigenous practice.
And what did corkwood have that helped a rough crossing?
Well, the local people originally had used it to stun fish when they went fishing, so it was a sedative. The soldiers who used it called it the mystery pill because it was shrouded in mystery because of the security of the day, and they just went to sleep and woke up when they landed.
I wish this was still available. I've had some horrible crossings of the channel. But how did this drug get from Australia to D-Day? I mean, it must have been in preparation well before the plans for the invasion.
Well, they collected the plant material from Australia and it was flown to Britain. So they actually, you know, it was also through the network of scientists and this is what happened, which is quite remarkable when you think about it. So it was, D-Day was delayed while the material that was sourced in Australia was flown to Europe.
Do you know whether, in fact, the crossing to D-Day was rough?
Well, I do know that the sailors, or not the sailors, the soldiers, did take the mystery pill. So I'd imagine it might have been. I imagine it was.
One
because
of you,
I can't imagine why they would have given them the mystery pill if it had been a calm sea.
Exactly. And one of you out there, one of our listeners, will know the answer to that question. Was the crossing to D-Day rough?
Now, I just wanted to share one more thing about that mystery pill.
Absolutely.
Because I would just like people to know that we have a package of it in the Medical History Museum, and the person who wrote the essay in the catalogue on this mystery pill was in fact Chris Cavalan, and I asked him for an image to accompany the essay, and he had images of the mystery pill in museums in Europe. But online, he found an unopened packet of the mystery pill, and the emotion sickness pill, it was called. And I bought it immediately online. Isn't shopping online fabulous?
Yes, yes.
And it was the only, well, he believed it was the only intact package remaining. And it got sent to me by post from the United States of America and was kindly opened by Border Force on the way through.
Oh, of course, of course. Look, Jackie, you can't be too careful. Now, this is obviously after the time when it was a huge secret, because this is manufactured by Eli Lilly. I'm looking at the photograph now. Six motion sickness preventive. And the instructions on the back: take one 30 minutes before and one at the time of embarking. And there it is.
So you can never be too careful.
No.
And who knows what's happened since 1944 to that medicine. But the great thing about that, so I do want to thank Border Force, is that I can display what was in the package.
Yes.
Because they opened all the elements. So it's all on display.
They even opened the pills themselves. Well, you might have been smuggling something, you know, enjoyable.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But we weren't. But we now can actually test those pills and verify what's in them as well. So we intend to do that in the future. So Border Force sort of did us a favour in some ways.
That's a wonderful story that you've just told. Why am I at this age hearing it for the first time? Is it in Australian war histories? Do we boast it?
We haven't. And I'm not sure why. I came across this information in 2018, and I have been telling people about it ever since. And Chris Cavalan, the scholar who has done the research, has published articles about it. But I think it's about time. It's a story that's told when we have our regular commemorations of these key events.
Absolutely. I'm talking to Jackie Healy, Director of Museums at the Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences at the University of Melbourne, about this extraordinary exhibition of cultural medicine. Now, Jackie, cultural medicine is more than medicine, isn't it? It is tradition, it's ceremony, it's many other things. How do we define cultural medicine?
Well, the title cultural medicine came from a work by Lynn Thorpe, a Yorta Yorta woman from the Shepparton area. And I think it's very important to quote the people who have provided this amazing body of knowledge to us. So this is Lynn Thorpe. Cultural medicine, as we live and practice it on Yorta Yorta country, extends beyond the limits of Western clinical frameworks. It is not simply a response to illness, but a sovereign act of remembering, returning, and cultural regeneration, rooted in country and carried through our everyday lives. It holds space for our stories, our songs, and our ways of being. Practices never lost, only interrupted. As a living system of relational knowledge, Nanyak Itja Wujik cultural medicine nourishes spirit, sustains kin, and reaffirms connections to land, community, and self.
So whether it cures colds and dulls pain is only part of the question about cultural medicine, but it is supposed to do those things, is it not?
Yes, it is, and it does that as well. But I think what Lynn Thorpe is referring to, and there is an amazing work in the exhibition from Kayla Arts from Shepparton, which has 14 artists, and the process of putting this artwork together, the oldest artist in the group, the elder, is in her 80s, the youngest is in her 20s. So this community of people, of elders sharing knowledge with younger people, got together and through a community of creativity created the most moving work of clay objects that were fired. They range from coulombs to little birds and animals, and they tell the stories of that area, the stories that have come from the older people who were brought up on missions, the stories about the waterways, the stories of how women work together. And this was done through talking, through gathering clay together from the banks of Kayla the Goulburn, and also Dungala the Murray, and then making the works, those beautiful small clay objects, firing them, and working together to produce an amazing artwork. The artwork was of such value to this group of people, they were actually reluctant for it to actually come to the exhibition. And I have indicated to them that they're very welcome to have it returned. And it was because it meant so much to them that they wanted to retain it within their community. And I think this is about healing. This is that word well-being, how we as communities create well-being. And I think it's something not to underestimate, the power of that and the power of sharing culture. And this is reflected throughout the exhibition in the works from varied artists and communities. But that is something that is shared, that love of country, but it's more than that. It's this deep spiritual and emotional connection to country.
Tell us the story of Ada Beasley, another artist, a story which, Jackie, I must say, frankly, makes me a bit nervous.
Well, Ada Beasley is a senior woman, Alawa language, who lives in that middle part of the Northern Territory called the Barkly Tablelands. And I discovered her work at an exhibition in Melbourne, this massive 1.5 metre by 2.5 metre work of country. And it was of country after the rain. And what was in that work was bush medicine, the flowering of these plants. I met her at the exhibition and talked to her about the work. And as a consequence of that, I commissioned smaller works that actually detailed the bush medicine that was in this huge painting that takes you right into country. And out of that connection with Ada, she shared a personal story that she has kidney problems, and that she is required, has been recommended by Western trained doctors to move to Tennant Creek, where she'll go on dialysis several times a week. And she has decided not to do this. And I'm allowed to share this story with you because she has said that that's fine to do that. Instead, she is staying on country and she is taking traditional medicine from the bush plum. And she has been doing that for over a year now, and she does not need yet to go into Tennant Creek.
When will she know that she does need to go?
Well, she's in contact with those Western doctors, and she will make that decision when she feels it's necessary. And I just want to quote how she describes the bush plum to you. It's called aqua. We eat them. This one is good for kidney infection. We eat the plums, that we take the leaves, boil them up, boil the leaves like tea. We boil them up every day, 5 days, take them with tea, then we go to clinic and infection all gone. And I think the point that needs to be made here quite clearly, that there is real recognition among many Indigenous communities that the way forward with their traditional medicines is in partnership with Western medicine. And I think this is an example of this. She will stay, Ada will stay where she wants to be as long as she can. And at the moment, that traditional medicine, that bush medicine, is working for her.
To Yirrkala, where there is a plant which helps children grow their second teeth. Now tell us about that.
We commissioned a work from the Buku Art Centre up there from Malkin Yupanda, and she is unfortunately no longer with us, but a very senior member of that community. And she documented bush medicine and bush taka through her art to share with her community. The dental school at the University of Melbourne has been working in North East Arnhem Land for over a decade, even longer than that, and has formed a strong relationship with the people there. So this commission was actually for the dental school, and no specifics were given of what might be in the work. And what came from it is the story of first teeth, of when children in that community lose their first teeth, those teeth are thrown into the roots of the pandanus, the ganga tree. And the reason why is those roots are symbols of the teeth of the shark, and it means that those first teeth will be replaced by strong teeth.
It immediately makes me think those poor kids are missing out on the tooth fairy.
Well, the great thing about this is that before this particular commission, that story had not been shared outside that community.
Ever?
No.
How extraordinary.
And then the following year, they actually put a work with that theme into NATSIA, the art prize in Darwin. So it was a real symbol of a relationship, a strong relationship between, I think, the carers who had gone to train people and work with people, and the response by that community. And the work is quite magnificent. Part of what this exhibition is, it's not all in the gallery space. Some of the works have stayed in situ throughout the University of Melbourne. And this beautiful work by Malkin Yupanda is actually in the dental school. It is a bark accompanied by a pole. Totally magnificent work. And the detail and the symbolism is of the leaves of the gunga and of that ceremony of the teeth.
This exhibition and the beautiful book, by the way, that goes with it, is very much about the art that comes from this tradition of cultural medicine. But I wonder what you know about the sort of scientific collection of cultural cures and whether these are being tested, whether they're being tried in a Western way.
I think this is about partnerships, and the exhibition has art in it, but it's actually not about the art. The exhibition is about the cultural knowledge. And we had an earlier show of the same theme, and all these works have been purchased by the University of Melbourne, so they stay in our collection. Bruce Pascoe visited the exhibition, and he said what was so important about it, that first Art of Healing exhibition, was that it was not in an art gallery. It was in a medical history museum, which is a totally different emphasis, because the emphasis is on the cultural knowledge that those amazing artworks hold, and that is what the value is. And there is strong relationships throughout the Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences with Indigenous communities, and the approach is one of partnership, to partner with these communities to see how we can, in fact, ensure that we benefit from the best of Western medicine and, more importantly, the best of First Nations medicine, which we have neglected to acknowledge, because in fact we have always used that First Nations medicinal knowledge, and we've incorporated into many of the things that we use, but we just have not acknowledged that source.
Tell us the story of the bull kelp water carriers.
These are made by Indigenous women in Tasmania, and they have been made for many thousands of years, but the practice was lost, and it was that Encounters exhibition that came out from the British Museum now over a decade ago that in fact had one of the kelp water carriers in it. And this was a catalyst for the convention of making these carriers to be reactivated in the community. So that was an amazing outcome from that exhibition. But what these beautiful kelp containers that are made out of a piece of kelp held together by tea tree skewers. And, of course, you think, well, the kelp, the water can't get through it. That was a great idea. But what an even greater part of what the kelp water carrier does is that kelp contains iodine. So, in fact, the water is sterilised. So, you know, this is the thing about many of the cultural practices and bush medicine. It is not about walking through an area and picking a plant or a leaf and putting it in your mouth. It's about it being treated at the right moment. It's about being picked at the right time of year. It's about being prepared in the appropriate manner. And it's about being used at the appropriate moment. So all these items include knowledge that has been acquired over a very long time and has been, in many instances, underestimated.
Jackie, thank you. The exhibition is on for ages, into the middle of next year, is that right?
That's it.
But, you know, people who don't go quickly to an exhibition often never get round to it. Don't you believe that it's a very good idea to go when you hear about it?
I think I always do that. And then the joy of that is you get to go back.
If you wish, you can go back. Putting things off is death for exhibitions, theatre, films, the lot. Go. What is the particular name of the universe, of the museum where it's being held? It's the
Medical History Museum at the University of Melbourne, and we have just moved to a new location.
Right, where?
It is 233 Bouverie Street in Carlton. So it's just off Grattan Street for those Melburnians, and it's very easy to get to, and we'd love to see you there.
Thanks, Jackie, for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
I've been talking to Dr. Jacqueline Healy, Director of Museums at the Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences at the University of Melbourne, about the Cultural Medicine Exhibition. And there is also this beautiful book, which is it's a catalogue of the exhibition, but it's in itself a most beautiful book. This is Late Night Live.